From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made 1 week ago last Thursday when Governor Andrew Cuomo traveled to Puerto Rico for the second time to assist with recovery efforts on the island. His delegation delivered water filtration systems and 27,000 bottles of water to Puerto Ricans who still don't have easy access to clean water, food, or power 6 weeks after the big storm. Cuomo was critical of the federal response to the crisis. He called the situation wholly, wholly unacceptable in Puerto Rico. He said, quote, "It would not be acceptable if any of the 50 states went through this. It wouldn't even be a question. There would be immediate outrage from everyone, and you should have the same outrage for Puerto Rico. It is not okay," end quote. And Cuomo isn't the only leader reacting this way. United Nations experts called the United States' response to the storm ineffective and lagging far behind the support provided for states affected by other recent hurricanes on the mainland. But here in Rochester, community members are uniting to help with recovery efforts, both for people on the island and those moving from Puerto Rico to our community. This hour, we're going to talk about not only current conditions on the island, what we know about what's going on, but the response in Rochester, which I think we can all agree has been remarkable from the outset, and we'll tell you how you can help assist hurricane victims. I'd like to welcome our guests who are here with us in studio. Tricia Cruz Irving is Director of Development and Communications for Ibero-American Action League. Tricia, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Annette Ramos is Founder and Executive Director of the Rochester Latino Theater Company. Annette, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Irene Sanchez is Founder and President of Puerto Ricanos Unidos en la Distancia, which is Puerto Ricans United in the Distance. Irene, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Jeremias Manero is Vice President of PR Unidos en la Distancia. Jeremias, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Irene, you founded Puerto Ricanos Unidos en la Distancia shortly after the storms hit the island. Tell us what the goal is of your organization.
Correct. So yes, our goal is to be able to serve as a liaison between the families arriving now from Puerto Rico and the agencies and organizations that are actively participating in the effort to help them. At first, we were able to collect donations, and we were able to raise nearly $9,000 to send to Puerto Rico within a week of Maria hurricane hitting Puerto Rico. And now we are working on create programs and facilitate that transition from them once they arrive.
Tricia, there's going to be families displaced in this case here, and what do we know about that so far?
So what we can tell you is that there is an enormous response effort taking place here locally that we're leading in collaboration with more than 20 other community agencies, and it's just a tremendous collaboration. It's amazing to see this. And so we can say that right now, approximately 500 people from Puerto Rico, so about 300 families, are here in the area. They're coming to us. We're getting between 20 phone calls and walk-ins every single day, Monday through Friday, at just our main office. And it's at least twice as that much at our emergency services division. They're coming to us. They have nothing. They have no clothes. Their kids need to go to school. Their kids don't know English. They don't have food. So we're really working with them directly to help provide them with the needs, the things that they need. And so next Thursday, we're having a welcome reception for these families where we're going to have all of the agencies that have been working with us in one location so that families can come to this one location, so it eases the burden of not making them having to go from one department or office to another. So we're going to have more than 20 organizations there responding to their needs. For example, the American Red Cross, Monroe County Department of Health Services, Catholic Family Center, Ibero, obviously, and just a slew of other organizations.
Next Thursday,
yep.
What time?
From 10 to 3 at 938 Clifford Avenue, which is the old Eugenio Maria de Hostos Charter School. So at 938 Clifford Avenue from 10 to 3.
If you know anyone who has these needs, and Tricia, in a moment we're going to say hello to Hilda Rosario Escher, president of the Ibero-American Action League, who's in Puerto Rico. But let me ask you just briefly here to make sure people understand why you're doing it this way. Sometimes when anybody is in need, you could be living in poverty in Rochester and you could be a Rochesterian for life. Imagine being Puerto Rican and you're displaced and you have to figure out where all these different sources of possible help or resources are. You want to pull them together for people?
Right. Well, you know, Rochester can be a very difficult city for people who are not from here, and especially for people who don't know the language. You know, if you were in Miami, LA, or New York, which I've lived at all those places, it's easy. There's a very large Latino population. They speak Spanish, and you can get by on just knowing Spanish and being a part of that community. But here in Rochester, you can't. And so when people come here, there are a number of different things that they're dealing with. One, the language. They don't know the language. And then having to navigate from one place to another, not having transportation, having to figure out the bus system. And then on top of that, when winter comes, it's a huge shock for people who are not used to this weather. It's a tremendous shock that takes a toll on them, not only physically, but mentally as well.
All right, so all of those things together in one place next Thursday. Let me welcome in Hilda Rosario Escher, who's president of the Ibero-American Action League. Hilda, I think we've got you on the line. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm very sad. Again, it has been a tremendous shock for me to see the island like it is now. I was in the center of the island this past weekend, and it's devastating. Small businesses that were in the center of the island, they are gone. So that means that there are people that have been displaced. They don't have, their means of survival anymore. But one thing that really, has surprised me is the spirit of the Puerto Rican people, that they come together and they help each other. And even people that come from out of Puerto Rico, they offer them the little bit water that they have or food that they have. So, that spirit is still there. And then there is a big campaign going on here to really maintain the people's spirit up, because it since the hurricane, there have been 7 suicides.
Hilda, can I ask you just briefly here, what you're seeing in terms of just basic electricity and power? One of the things I'm reading in a lot of places is how jolting it is to see a lack of electricity, not just in the central parts of Puerto Rico, but also in San Juan, and I'm curious to know if you agree in what you have seen.
Absolutely. When I landed, I was really surprised because San Juan is the capital of Puerto Rico. It should have been the first city, but basically it's not. The San Juan is dark. All San Juan is dark, and all San Juan is home to many small businesses. There are about 10,000 people in San Juan alone, all San Juan, that cannot open the little shop for the tourists when they come because they don't have electricity. So that's very sad to see. Why is that? I don't know. Maybe it's because the mayor of San Juan is one political party and the governor is a different political party. So that's my assessment. Mm. Maybe not, but
okay, well, Hilda,
what else could it be?
Hilda, trying to take politics out of this, and I understand what you're saying. I mean, from your observation, maybe that political difference is actually leading to some dissonance in providing aid, which is
right.
that would be wholly sad if that were true. But, there's been a lot of criticism and a lot of assessment already on what the needs are. How do you view the biggest needs? What are the biggest needs right now for Puerto Rico, Hilda?
Well, besides the electricity and running water, it's food. Food is not getting to all the people. So the water, ice, believe it or not, ice is commodity here. Every place we go, it says no ice or water, no water. So it's very difficult here. I see, a couple of my family members are small business owners, and I see the struggles that they go through every day to try to keep their businesses going. But, the other thing is that in terms of the electricity, they hired this company that it's so small that had no experience in disasters, So, and now the contract was revoked, and now, they got away for another 30 days. And so that means that the people are the ones that are suffering.
Hilda, let me also ask you a question that I don't mean to reduce things to numbers or statistics, but I do want to ask this for a reason. Sometimes Americans from a distance, when they see a natural disaster, you know, we can contextualize it by comparing it to other events of similar nature. And there's been a big discrepancy in reporting on how many people have died as a result of this hurricane. Fox News recently reporting the number is 54 official deaths tied to the hurricane. Weather.com and the Weather Channel reporting and ABC News reporting that the only way a death would be considered related to a hurricane is if a medical examiner directly examined a body and tied it to the storm. But the reality is there could be approaching 1,000 already. And so those are huge discrepancies. What do people on the island feel? I mean, the loss of life is significant, no matter what that number is, but what do we think the actual result is, Hilda?
Well, we think that about 900 people.
Hmm. Wow. 900 people.
Yeah. There is one town which I went to yesterday, Tuabaja, and that town, there were a lot of people that drowned because they released a dam, and a river goes right through the middle of the city. Oh my gosh, that town is really devastated. I tell you, there is piles of garbage everywhere, mattresses, stoves, you name it, trees. It's unbelievable. I have never seen anything like it.
It's also being reported that the weather has continued to be hot and kind of muggy. It's difficult. And that a lot of the trees were knocked down and sort of defoliated in the storm, and that has made things more difficult. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. It's very, very hot and very, very humid. And that's, you know, the island lost a lot of the vegetation, so that complicates everything. So when you're trying to do things and you're working outside, it's not easy.
So Hilda, we have you for a couple of more minutes, and we'll let you go. Can you tell us what your plan is there in Puerto Rico? What you're going to be doing next, and what you're thinking about next to try to help people?
Well, I still have a lot of families that I haven't seen, but I also want to have, you know, do a little bit, more for my people. I'm planning to go to other towns and bring, because they don't have electricity, they don't have ice, bring some bread. Last week, I purchased like 40 pounds of bread, and I went around providing them to different people in different communities that, you know, they need a lot of help.
Hilda, I can hear emotion in your voice, and I know you said that Puerto Ricans are showing amazing spirit and resilience in this, but I can also hear it in your voice, just how difficult it is to see this. What do you want to leave our listeners with as you do the work right there on the island? I mean, most of us have never been there. What do you want to leave with our listeners who are considering ways to help?
Well, I think that, you know, we have a lot of people going to Rochester and going to the different communities, and if we can really do something for those people that are coming in, it's heartbreaking what they have gone through, and so if we can welcome them, that would be great.
Hilda, safe travels. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing there and for sharing a few minutes of your time with us here on the program today.
Thank you.
Hilda Rosario Escher is president of the Ibero-American Action League, and she is there in Puerto Rico, and you can hear you can just hear. Let me go around the table and just ask for some thoughts there. I'll start with Annette Ramos, founder and executive director of Rochester Latino Theater Company. I heard a mix of, you know, sort of appreciation for the resilience of the Puerto Rican people, but also just devastation in her voice and what she's saying.
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, it made me quite emotional, as well as the conversations have been that way with family and my friends that I've connected to as well. You cannot imagine, and I lived in L.A. during the riots as well as during major earthquakes. Mm-hmm. So I understand what devastation in a city that's broken feels and looks like. I just cannot imagine seeing the tropical rainforest gone. I cannot. These are images that I don't want to have in my mind. So the fact that Hilda is sharing those with us really brings it home, the reality. And you know, this comparison to Hurricane Katrina is just so erroneous. It's so such a dichotomy of what really looks like, what it really looks like. Because when a city or a town is devastated, basic needs, water, electricity, food, medicine, these things can cripple communities. The wonderful thing is that Puerto Ricans are really resilient people, just like the little Coqui frog that overcomes every obstacle to win that race and to get that voice. That is truly what my people, what I feel, and the authentic passion that we have about our island, our motherland, our cultural connection to that. And I've also felt it and experienced it here in Rochester. Many communities, even non-Latino communities, are coming to our aid. Jiva just did in the Heights, and they raised over $70,000 in 3 weeks. And that was the cast and the audiences. One night we raised $6,000 in cash. So the commitment to our community. And the wonderful thing is, maybe Rochester needed a disaster to bring us together in a way that says, Latinos, 88 plus thousand, we are part of this community. We are vibrant. We are here. We contribute. And to have that support by our non-Latino counterparts is wonderful. The theater community, RBTL is going to be doing a clothing drive and a food drive for Ibero that we did last year. We're already rallying all different communities of artists to come together and support. The music community here has done a tremendous job. So that's the passion that keeps the action moving forward. We can't stop. And the reality is, Hilda said it to me a month ago. She goes, we need to keep this on the radar, because 1 week of fundraising does not solve the long systemic problem that our people will face on the island. This is a long haul, longer than Katrina, it will be. So we have to look at what can we do November, December, January, February, and keeping that on the radar, keeping it point, our focus on that is going to help the families arriving here and our families in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, so often you get a little reporting, you get a surge of reporting, and then things sort of move on. And so let me ask Tricia Cruz then. Tricia Cruz Irving, Director of Development and Communications for Ibero-American Action League. You know, Annette is talking about the many efforts to raise money and services and goods for people on the island. Part of what Ibero is doing, especially next Thursday, is helping people who are going to be coming here. Can you tell our audience, who are not Puerto Ricans, as Annette says, this has to be an issue for all of us, what we can do to be welcoming, to be mindful of people who are going to be new in our community?
You know, even for example, it starts with customer service. As a simple hello, making people feel welcome, being nice to people, not being short with them, not being rude. Even nowadays, for example, for people who do speak English, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've called certain organizations or places and the first person who answers is extremely rude. And it's one of my pet peeves because, you know, back in the day, customer service used to be so much better than what it is now. And nowadays, when you have people who are in the front office answering these phones or the doors and they're being rude to you, and so that's, you know, to me, who has no problem with the English language. So then imagine what it would be like for somebody who doesn't speak English or speaks a little bit. And I've had people tell me this before. A few years ago, I had somebody from Puerto Rico tell me that as soon as she would go to a certain office and they heard her speak and they saw her, that their demeanor would change towards her and the way they would talk to her. And I would just try to imagine that, like how awful, you know, that must make somebody feel. Like, you know, that must really, you know, decrease their self-esteem and then make them feel like, you know, they want to go back home and not go out. So really one of the most important things that people can do is when we say, you know, let's make everybody feel welcome. And certainly, you know, this goes to another issue that right now it's the Puerto Rican community that's suffering, so we should be welcoming to them. But this really goes to everybody who comes to Rochester. You know, let's be welcoming to everybody. You know, let's be open-minded. Let's be willing to meet new people, to say hello, to ask them, you know, where are you from? Or, you know, what are you interested in doing? Just to be more of like an opening community. And I'm not saying that we're not, but there's always room for improvement. But just a simple hello, being courteous to people, you know, if they don't speak the language well, that's okay. You know, let's work with them. But again, we can't say enough about the tremendous response that we've gotten from the local community. People here, especially in the non-Latino community, have been absolutely amazing. Every single day, we are getting phone calls from people who are offering rooms in their houses for free, who are offering to donate clothing, all kinds of items. We have kids. We have schools that are calling us and saying, our kids really want to do something. We want to raise money. What can we do? Today, we just received a check from students at Virtus Charter High School for $2,500. I got a phone call from St. Mary's this today telling me they raised almost $900 for our Hurricane Maria fund. So to hear from the schools that these kids want to do things, the response has just been amazing. And this really has been a testament to the giving nature of people in this community.
What are you hearing about what it is like on the ground right now? I mean, you just heard Hilda. I mean, clearly emotional to see it herself. What are you hearing, Tricia?
So here locally or there?
What are you hearing about what's happening in Puerto Rico still?
Okay, so my family's okay, so I can't go by what they're saying. So then I would go by what other people are saying. And for example, Hilda is, you know, I work with her daily, obviously. And so even before she left, she was heartbroken to hear that her family, you know, had gone days without food. And then when she went there, she had said it's even worse once you get here. And so, you know, and for people who have been there, you know, I've been to Puerto Rico. And so when you go to Puerto Rico and you go to the country roads and you see how desolate it is or how isolated, to then imagine what it's got to be like now, it is really hard to imagine. And it really makes you feel for the people who are there that they're not getting the things that they need that have been donated. So it really is just a sad, sad situation.
And to Annette's point, you agree with the idea that whatever the disaster is, earthquakes, hurricanes, other events, Americans are pretty giving people, but there's a lot in our lives. It's a lot to make us forget or move on. And what is the importance to you as we go forward of that not happening with Puerto Rico?
You know, Americans, yes, are definitely very giving people. I guess one answer that comes to my mind is that we're going to have to wait to see, because right now the response is really great in this community. And I have the media, for example, coming to me every week asking me, can you give us any updates or can you tell us about this or that? So the media has been great as far as giving attention to this, you know, from the local side and even from what's going on over at the island. So we see this, you know, going on for many, many more months. So after the welcome reception that we have next Thursday, that's going to be the same location as our multi-agency resource center. And we're going to have that open twice a week, every Tuesday and Thursday, so that families can continue to go there, that one-stop shop kind of idea, or where they can go to one place and get all the answers and information that they need. So that's going to happen after our welcome reception. And right now, we're planning to have that continue for at least the next 6 months.
How long do you think this issue is going to be hitting Puerto Rico? I mean, we're talking years?
I would say so. I mean, it's hard to say. You know, I'm not there. That's really hard to say. I don't think it would be fair for me to give the response to that because I'm not there seeing it. Hilda is there. So certainly when Hilda can tell us, like, if she sees this being, like, many years ahead before Puerto Rico gets back on its feet, I think it's safe to say yes.
Well, let's get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back and talk to Irene and Jeremias about Puerto Ricanos Unidos en la Distancia, Puerto Ricans United in the Distance, that they created after these storms. We'll talk about what they have been working toward and where you can access it. We'll get their thoughts on what they're hearing, not only from Hilda, but also what they're hearing from perhaps friends and family and people impacted by these terrible storms. We're getting you updated on what's going on in Puerto Rico, and we'll come right back with them after our only break of the hour. Coming up in our second hour, Paychex founder and philanthropist Tom Golisano joins me in studio. He's fighting another property tax assessment, but he's also fighting a broader effort. He says it's not just about his own property taxes. He says the system is unfair and he can afford to fight it, but a lot of people cannot. And this is about helping everyone have a fair shot. We'll talk to him about it in studio next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Hurricane Maria made landfall on Wednesday, September 20th in Puerto Rico, a Category 4 storm at the time with winds of 155 miles an hour. And keep in mind, that was just 2 weeks after Hurricane Irma, which was what you would call technically an indirect hit. But by mass and size, it was a bigger hurricane, and that was a serious blow to begin with. So we're talking about what is going on now to help those in Puerto Rico and help those who are going to be displaced. And obviously, it's thousands of people. We've got a strong community in western New York. And Jeremias Monero and Irene Sanchez are here from Puerto Ricanos Unidos en la Distancia to tell us what they are doing and what they want you to know about helping people in need here. So, Irene, this is something that you guys created after the storms. Tell us what the goal was and how you put this together.
Well, the page was funded in 2015 first through Facebook just to communicate. And when the Maria hurricane hit, we just sent a Facebook message saying, you know, we got to do something. I started getting a lot of phone calls and a lot of people contacting me and say, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And immediately we sent a Facebook message. And I thought that we will get, I don't know, 10 people. But in a tiny office, we got 40 people that I don't even know, strangers. And we say, okay, we're here to help. What are we going to do? And we form a group. We decided, you know, this is something that, as we were talking about, it's going to take a long time for the people of Puerto Rico to recover. So we felt that the presence of the Puerto Rican community and Hispanic community needed to be strong, especially to advocate for the families coming. So we decided to form the group. We have our vision to empower everybody who come to improve the quality of life. So it's not just about to receive them and help them here temporarily, but it's also to guide them and help them so they can be self-sufficient and successful here in New York too. I came over here about 11 years ago, and I went through some barriers, like language barrier, cultural barriers, but I never went through the trauma. So we're going to be receiving people who are going through so much for the worst hurricane ever in Puerto Rico, so we want to be able to be welcoming to them, but also help them to connect to the agencies and the programs that are available for them. Right now what we're doing is we have a project called Mano Amiga, Friendly Hand, and we're going to be trying to train volunteers. We have about 15 people listed already to volunteer with a program. It is just going to be adopting a family, be their friend, and be able to guide them to whatever is needed for them. Is it just bringing them over to the Welcome Resource Center that Ibero is planning? Is it to be able to provide transportation for them? Is it translating for them? Is it to complete an application for them? That person is going to serve as a guide and for them to be able to help them so they can not just access the services that are available for them, but also to become self-sufficient as fast as possible.
This is, I want to hit this again because our listeners may be very interested. This is a way it sounds like you can, as Irene said, kind of adopt a family. So,
yes.
So for Puerto Rican families who end up here, displaced, you can become a mano amiga, a friendly hand.
Yes.
What is the time commitment and what would that entail if they want to do it?
Well, right now we have a Facebook page and we have a website that we're launching tomorrow. Through the Facebook page, they can contact us. We have an event already running. The training day will be on the 18th. We're still looking for a location. We're waiting to see how many people will volunteer for this for them to decide what type of location we will use. Hopefully by next week, we will know better. But if anybody wants to contact us, they can reach out through the Facebook page or through the website.
And the website and Facebook pages are going to be you can find them where?
Yes, website, of course, is a free program. It's www.purunidos.weebly.com. purunidos.weebly.com.
Weebly, W-E-E-B-L-Y.
Correct.
.com. Okay. And by the way, listeners, on our podcast page, we'll link you to all of this stuff. And the Facebook page is under what?
It's Puerto Ricanos Unidos en la Distancia, United in the Distance.
Okay. So you'll find it there.
Yep. And we have a link through the website. So if it's easier to access the website, you will be able to access the Facebook page right from there.
I would not be surprised if there are people listening right now who think, that is something I can do. I can drive. I can help. I can be a welcoming
Wonderful.
Voice. You know, and so I know that they're just kind of getting up, as Irene and Jeremias are telling us, you know, a lot is still developing.
Yes.
But get in touch with them. They're findable through the websites. And my guess is if people email you or reach out to you, you will make sure that you stay in touch.
Correct.
With
them. Definitely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Jeremias, what do you want our listeners to know about what you guys are going to be doing in the future here and the opportunities for them to help?
Well, like that's been said already, we want to keep this top of mind. We're going to be continuing to do fundraisers, food drives, everything that we can. People are constantly reaching out to me and saying, you know, are you still taking donations? The answer is yes, and it will be for a long, long time. So right now we're putting some measures in place to be sure that we have long-term storage if we need to, so that we can store it and be sure that it gets to where it needs to get, so it gets to the people either, you know, in Puerto Rico who need it, or the people who are displaced who are coming here who have nothing.
I like what we're hearing this hour. I have to say, it's almost a challenge to our community to be the most welcoming community in the country. Trisha Cruz Irving is making a great point here. You know, you can do so much just by being kind to somebody and not being standoffish if you're in customer service, or if you see them on the street, or if you're on the bus with them, or if you say hello to them in the store, or if they catch your eyes, you don't have to look away right away. Sometimes those little things, especially for families in need, go so far. And now, you can also, through Puerto Ricanos Unidos en la Distancia, maybe adopt a family, maybe provide a little time during the week, even if you can't give money. So this is a real challenge for our community. And I'm curious to know what Jeremias and Irene think about the way our community tends to respond to these. What do you think?
Well, we recently did a fundraiser, a Zumbathon. It was on 10 days' notice. And like she said, a room of 40 strangers came together we had never met prior to this meeting, and on 10 days' notice put together an event that raised almost $9,000 and a 16-foot U-Haul truck full of donations. So to say, I mean, just the support was unbelievable. And it wasn't just Puerto Ricans. It was everybody from all different backgrounds that showed up that day and are continuing to support the cause. And that's why we want to, you know, be out, be vocal, and be sure to keep this top of mind. I can say I had an eye-opener just last week when the power went out in my house for 12 hours. Okay, so you want to open your own eyes? Turn the power off in your own house for a day. Turn the water off for a day, and then walk to the nearest place to get water. Yeah. That's what they're living in every single day since the hurricane, and will be for a long, long time.
What a great point. I mean, the power goes off for like an hour. I'm like, what is going on here? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just our reaction for an hour. That is so well said. Let me ask Irene, you know, as you said, you weren't coming to Rochester through a situation of trauma or loss, but tell me about your story and what that is like, you know, and how your experience informs the work you're doing now.
Well, I'm currently working for the Work and Justice Center of New York, so I have experience working in casework and be able to help people once they get here. But when I moved here initially, I came over here because I wanted to learn English. And it was funny because a lot of people asked me, do you think that evacuees will stay? And I said, you know what? You don't know, because you fall in love with Rochester and the community, and then you decide to stay. And I made this my second home. But when I moved here, I went through so much struggles that I don't want other people who come to go through them if it's not necessary. You know, sometimes knowing something as simple as, I don't know where to change my driver's license. I don't know where to, what is the bus station so I can drop off my son at school, or this is the application that I have to complete for this or that for that. Simple things like that sometimes we take for granted because we're used to this educational program or educational system. This is how we work. We're so used to this that we forget that other people who are new in the area, they don't know about this. They don't know about lottery for the Rochester School District. They don't know about the documentation that they have to complete. They don't even know where to stand for a bus, because in Puerto Rico, you don't get bus transportation. So basic things like that, they don't know about it. And it's important for us to just be guiding them through that so they don't go through the same issues that other people unfortunately have to go through. Other thing that I just wanted to mention about the people getting together, we receive a lot of phone calls from churches, and we partner with a church who is donating a space in their church for a food pantry, so we can provide a welcome package for family once they come. Winter jackets, they are collecting winter jackets, they are collecting all the things that is going to be so important. When I moved here on May 1st, and I was freezing.
You're
on May 1st.
On May 1st, I moved
winter
here.
Winter jackets for families coming here, of course.
Yes, so
yes,
yeah, I moved here on May 1st, and I remember to be freezing that I have to ask a friend to turn on the heat in his car. And he was like, what are you asking me to do? What? And they're like in short sleeve, and I'm like with a winter jacket already. Like, I'm freezing right now. So just to keep those things in mind, they're coming from an island who is between 85 to 90 degrees weather, and they're coming down to 60 degrees. It's very likely that, you know, they will be very cold, or they will get sick, or they don't know where to go. So all those things, it's important that we train volunteers to keep in mind so they can help them and facilitate their transition once they come.
Absolutely. So lots of different ways to help. Yeah, and 60 degrees today, 40 degrees this weekend.
Yeah. Do you that's like below zero for us.
Do you ever get used to it?
Can I lie in there? No. I love Rochester, and I think I love this change of the seasons. I'm not happy when it's like 2-3 weeks already in the winter, but I really like what everybody else does. My son loves the snow. I love to play with the snow outside. I love to do a snowman. So I love the Christmas season. I love, you know, everything, the way that it changes. So I think it will be very good to help them to adapt to this culture as well. So it's going to be beautiful.
So much great perspective. The next time you're walking to your car and you're complaining about the cold, think about a family from Puerto Rico struggling with the language here because maybe they lost a home and they have never been this cold. It's just tremendous perspective. Did you find this to be a welcoming community otherwise, though?
Definitely. Yeah? I definitely love Rochester. I consider this my home. It's been 11 years. I was supposed to stay just two. My son loved the community. Everybody's very welcoming. The diversity of the community, the different cultures, the different backgrounds, it's beautiful. It's priceless.
Wendy writes to the program and says, Evan, thank you for this program, but I'm concerned that money and supplies are not getting through to the island where needed. I've heard that in various media reports. Can your guests tell us what is going on? It's a good question, Wendy. I don't know all of the answers there. Tricia Cruz Irving, do you know any update there? Are we getting a little bit better about getting things through to where they need to go?
So that's exactly what we've been hearing as well, which is very unfortunate, that there are so many things that have been collected for people in Puerto Rico, but that they're not getting those things. And Hilda even mentioned it when we spoke to her earlier. And it's a shame. You know, we're not there, you know, so we can't do anything about it from here. But it is what we're hearing. And it's really unfortunate. Hmm. I don't know what more to say because it's just so unfortunate. And obviously, we all wish we could do something about it.
Yeah, I mean, I have no doubt that the logistics, it's got to be a tremendous challenge because roads might not be passable in some communities and there's all kinds of infrastructure damage. What you hope is, sort of metaphorically, that the dam's about to break, that all the supplies that are sitting there waiting to go out, eventually they've got it cleared up. That doesn't mean that there isn't need, but there's also going to be need for people here. And we got an email from a listener named Jeff who wanted to know, Evan, have you clarified exactly how many families are coming to Rochester and where they're going to live? I don't know yet. Do we know that, Tricia?
So what happens is a lot of people come to Rochester. Most people from Puerto Rico come to Rochester because they have family here. So what they'll initially do is they'll make plans to stay with family because, you know, for us, it's very normal to have 10 people in a house or, you know, it's very normal to have a lot of people in a house or a bedroom. That's just normal for us growing up. So they'll come and they'll stay with relatives, but obviously their goal will be to eventually get on their own, get their own house. You know, their kids are going to school. They're going to want to have their own space. So that's one of the things that we're working with. The Housing Council is one of the organizations that we're partnering with as in this multi-agency resource center where they're going to be talking to families, letting them know what they can do. Pathstone is also a part of this effort, and they'll be talking to families to let them know what they can do as well.
I mean, every family is going to have a slightly different situation based on their needs, based on maybe family they have here, based on how rough it is for them back in Puerto Rico. Is this a community, Tricia, that is preparing for all kinds of scenarios? You know, some people may be coming to stay through the winter or the fall and try to get back home. Others may be coming for permanent. Is there some permanence expected for families that are leaving Puerto Rico?
Yes, and again, I can tell you the collaboration that is taking place between us and these organizations is absolutely amazing. When you get more than 20 people in one room and everyone is just giving great input, great ideas, and truly collaborating, and you don't have, you know, so a lot of times, you know, people tend to talk over each other or there's like a lot of just people want to, you know, hear themselves talk. There's none of that. I mean, every single representative from every organization is just so respectful and so thoughtful and strategic. It's just amazing to just be sitting in the room with all of these representatives from these agencies and collaborating in this enormous effort.
They're going to be there a week from today. Tricia, again, for listeners just jumping in or maybe who can help spread this information to the people who need it, a week from today is what?
Yep. So next Thursday, the 9th. at 938 Clifford Avenue. We're going to have a welcome reception from 10 to 3. And we really encourage people who live outside of Monroe County that if they know of families that have come from Puerto Rico, to please let them know about this welcome reception, because we know that they're feeling isolated, that they're wondering who to turn to. So the welcome reception will be a great place for them to go, to feel welcomed, and to get a lot of information. And then love the idea that's been presented about adopting a family and really just serving even as like as guides to help them answer questions and continue with them in the process. Because I will tell you, for Spanish-speaking families, it's so important and it means so much when someone has taken a genuine interest in helping you. You don't forget that. You remember that for the rest of your life, that somebody took the time to help you and that they didn't have to, but that they did. That's something that stays with you forever.
Estamos listos a ayudar, I think, is how we would say it. Yes. So Annette, what would you say to listeners who are looking for their own ways to help here? Whether it is time, maybe some people have money to give, maybe some don't. What would you say to people about the various ways do you think we can help?
Well, of course, coming from the arts perspective, I would say support local Latinx art. We are a thriving community, second largest of Latinos in New York State, and we have a vibrant Latinx arts community, Borinquen dance, theater. We have been around for many years. And the success of the Rochester Latino Theater Company has been, you know, very much, Evan, as a result of the work that we've done together, but also that crossover market. We've had successful 65% of our fringe shows were all non-Latinos. So there is a curiosity. My favorite phone call, my favorite conversation with a patron of the arts was someone who heard me on your show and said, I was very curious and I came to see what this Latino community was doing. And at the end of the event, she said, I felt so welcomed. That's the kind of people we want. And I believe that's the kind of people that make up Rochester. And that, you know, I'm a transplant too, 21 years. I came here, I got immediately involved within the small little budding communities of Borinquen Dance Theater and Ibero's work in the greater community, the Puerto Rican Festival, the Puerto Rican Parade. These communities embraced me, welcomed me, brought me in, and gave me a job and a task to do. And then opening that up for others and non-Latinos. I mean, we go to opera, we go to the ballet, going to hear a salsa band, which is an amazing, you cannot sit to hear a salsa band. And even if you don't understand the music, the passion and the essence of cultural pride just permeates throughout all of our art. So I say support local art, be experiential, try something different. Maybe go and eat at El Pilon today or one of the fabulous other Latino restaurants. Experience the diversity that Rochester offers. And I agree, we are a very diverse community. Let's celebrate that. Let's support each other. Let's create more community, impactful, united.
There's a theme that I think has emerged here, and I want to tie a few threads together and ask our guests to comment on it, because what Annette is talking about when it comes to the Latino Theater Company, as just one example.
One.
I think of the Rochester Gay Men's Chorus, which is celebrating 35 years, and they talked about how through much of their infancy, you know, their patrons were people from the LGBT community, and now, of course, you've got this diversity of an audience that goes because they're awesome at what they do. But sometimes what we see are little silos in our community, these diverse cultures that come, which is wonderful, but sometimes the arts community, Latino stays largely, Latino audiences, and whether it's gay men's choir, or whatever it is. And the question becomes, how do you kind of maintain a culture and an identity within a community while also kind of, you know, joining that community and becoming part of it and welcoming them in? And that's probably a process that happens over time. But Tricia, I'll start with you. I mean, how important is it for the identity to be maintained, all of those wonderful traditions, but also to become part of that community, you know, sort of as expats?
Oh, for sure. So that's something that we're always promoting at Ibero, that really, you know, for example, we want people to know that we serve individuals and families of all ethnic backgrounds with that unique ability to target the Latino community. And the reason that we really are always saying that is because we want people to know that we're inclusive. You know, certainly there are certain areas where we do just target the Latino community, and rightfully so, when it has to do with education, for example. But yeah, it's just so important. You know, we're one community, and within one community, we have many different groups. And it's just important for all of us, you know, we're neighbors, or, you know, we, you know, Rochester's not very big. So we're bound to know somebody who knows somebody else. Somehow something always comes back like, oh, you know that person, or you know that person. So it's just, it's really important to be inclusive and to make people feel welcome. And because, again, we are one community, and by working together, by collaborating, it only leads to a stronger community. You can't go wrong.
Irene, how do you feel about that?
I completely agree. I think one of the things that our group is doing to help to the Puerto Ricans when they come to keep their culture, but at the same time enjoy it about the culture of Rochester, is that we're celebrating a Christmas party on December 23rd. And instead of doing the traditional Three Kings, we would like for them to know more about Santa Claus and enjoy the snow and enjoy the cookies and all those things that are characteristics of the culture here. And just to address something that we talked about it before, about transporting the stuff to Puerto Rico, a friend, her name is Maria Delgado, created a group. It's called Puerto Rico One Box at a Time. It's PR One Box at a Time. And it's a group in which people are adapting boxes to be sent to Puerto Rico. So she is putting together just food and water and things in there. And people are donating these items, and they are being sent to people who really need it. So if you know anybody who wants to be part of this, who would like to adapt, it's just $18.95. And they would like to adapt a box to be sent to Puerto Rico, please do so. Because every little thing that we can do to send help is valuable.
Jeremiah?
Well, just to follow up on that, we've had some success in hearing from people in the area. I have family still there. I have an aunt. She lives in Las Marias in the hills, where we didn't talk to her actually till about a week ago. She was able to get a satellite phone and get a message out that she was okay. But we've had success with USPS. United States Postal Service, just sending packages. You can earmark it for somebody. As long as you have their address, it'll go to the local post office eventually. We're not going to say it's going to be as soon as anything else you would send. But USPS, as well as there's the UPS store in Webster, and we'll post this later, that's offering discounts for anybody to ship things to Puerto Rico. So if you know somebody who's in need, even if it's not your friend or family member, you hear from a friend who hears from a friend, you can ship it directly to be sure that they get it. And that was one of our concerns when we collected a lot of the food when we did our fundraiser. We weren't in a rush to send it out because we wanted to be sure that it would go to where it would be needed most, not sit in a warehouse somewhere or sit in customs and not be able to get to the people who really need it.
Okay, great. Well, let me grab one quick phone call. And this is Deborah in Naples. Go ahead, Deborah.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a very large community of certified therapy dog handlers in the Rochester area. We are certified through Therapy Dogs International in New Jersey. And if you contact Therapy Dogs International for your speakers here, they will send out emails to all of the local members if you have events that you would like visits, or you have families that would like a visit. I certainly would love to visit. It will maybe improve my Spanish that I've lost along the years. And dogs don't speak any language, so they are soothing and comforting to families that are under stress.
All right, Deborah, thank you. Every little effort, right? So, Deborah, thank you for the phone call. And that's true. Dogs don't speak any language.
And that was really nice. Again, that and was. That's just an example of
perfect
people
example.
Coming forward. Like, that's just really nice.
Awesome. Deborah, thank you for that. Let me squeeze in one quick question. Alex on Twitter wants to know, he wonders how this situation might affect the statehood debate. That's a whole separate conversation. Everyone in studio
show.
Says, I don't know, but is that a conversation that's being had more often now? I mean, Annette, you're nodding. I mean, and not everybody agrees. I certainly understand that.
Yes, the politics of statehood is a whole other conversation. We can have many and multiple shows on that.
Probably a lot of passion about it.
Correct. On both sides of the coin.
Sure.
Fundamentally, the infrastructure of Puerto Rico right now, and I'm talking about just the the physicality of it is so desperate that conversation cannot be had until there's a stability, not only within the economics, the social, all of that. And then, of course, then the politics will come in and have that conversation and dialogue. The one thing I do want to add to the conversation about how Rochester can be is, you know, cultural sensitivity awareness, the trainings that Ibero has a fantastic program around being aware. How do you invite a new and diverse culture within your organization? And Rochester's economic vitality will rest on our ability to be welcoming and diverse and create a community that really celebrates that uniqueness. I mean, the fact that she said she wanted to improve her Spanish, yay! We've got many events. And the fact that dogs speak the universal language of love is, to me, what a great opportunity to bring those diverse communities together.
Por supuesto. Yeah, Deborah, that was sort of a beautiful way to end the hour here. And I just want you to know what's coming up here. So get in touch with Ibero. What's the easiest way to get in touch with Ibero if you've got questions about what's coming up next Thursday? Tricia?
Email us information@iaal.org, information@iaal.org.
Please do it. Make sure they are really organized and ready to help, and this is a critical time. Real quick, online, it's Puerto Ricanos Unidos en la Distancia. Find them on Facebook. They're going to have a website. Contact Irene Jeremias and the team if you want to help, and thank you for the work that you're doing. I know there's a lot of work ahead here, but thank you for coming in and sharing it with us today. Thank you, Annette Ramos from Rochester Latino Theater Company.
Thank you, Evan.
As always, Tricia Cruz Irving, thank you. And our thanks to Hilda Rosario Escher from Ibero as well. Short break, and Tom Golisano joins us next.